Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Oskaloosa, Tennessee, Chicopee.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you very much, Audrey. Thank you again for getting us on the show with no glitches whatsoever. I couldn't get Johnny Cash to stop singing that song. Can you believe that? He really likes that song where he sings about 90 cities and states as he travels, hitchhikes across the country. When's the last time you hitchhiked, Audrey? You never have in your life? Oh, okay. Back in a long time ago, people used to hitchhike, and it was fairly safe, actually. I'm not sure how much I would suggest that now, although, you know, crime is down, but particular types of crime are not down so much, I would think. Welcome to the Blog Talk Radio Network, and enough of this nonsense, and you're listening to the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm your host, Keith Haley, and Johnny Cash does sing that song, 90 Cities and States, sings it from memory, an incredible thing. Emily, Mike, thank you very much for being here, and Lucy, your second night on the show. We're very pleased to have you here, and I understand you have a blonde joke for us tonight, too, and we're certainly looking forward to that. Ladies and gentlemen, Lucy has joined us from London, England. And she's very pleased to be on our staff. She's going to be doing some heavy research and reporting for us in future shows. But welcome, Lucy. We're glad you're here. The purpose of the show is to look at some news issues and events and strange developments sometimes, and the always difficult in humorous practice of criminal justice. Once in a while, we get a couple things tonight that I think are a little bit odd. President Biden said one of them. I'm still trying to figure out what he said. You've probably heard his comment about rapes are going to increase. I'll talk about that later when I look at a news item. But this show is dedicated to our energetic and tireless police, courts, corrections, juvenile justice people that serve us throughout the United States. And they're going through some dire straits now in some communities in the United States, not all by far, but a lot of places are cutting back, laying off, not hiring new people, and crime does continue, and service calls do continue, so we need people to do that. We hope that they're able to sustain themselves in their work for the sake of them and their families, of course. But what we try to do in the show is look inside the practice of criminal justice and take a close-up look at its professionals. Tonight we're going to do something a little odd. I was going to have a guest, actually, but the guest could make it, but we can book him in future weeks. But tonight we're going to take a look at a show that I discovered that goes way back to the early 1930s, and it was called Black and Blue. And this was a radio show, and it's about the world's dumbest and luckiest detectives. So we'll play two. These radio shows in the 30s, you probably realize, if you've been listening to our show, were often 15-minute shows. And some of our original television shows, I think, were the same way. But we're going to play two of them tonight. One of them is called Shortages. That was the first show ever done in the series. And another one was called Put Off the Train. And Black and Blue are the names of the two dumbest and luckiest detectives in the world, apparently. But anyway, that's what we'll be doing this evening. If you're listening to Blog Talk Radio Network, you can join us if you want. What is possible, you can get your own show. It's still just absolutely incredible that you can line up all these people and talk to them all over the world, and it doesn't cost you a penny unless you want to broadcast for an hour between 7 and 10. But any other time, it's absolutely free. And I think shorter shows, no, I think 7 to 10 is closed now. You have to pay a little bit of a fee to get that, but it's not much. But you could be 6 o'clock, you could be 11 o'clock, 10:30, that type of thing. Okay, get your own show. We said that. Go ahead and do it. Now, you can call in during our news segment if you want to the number 347-996-5983. That's 347-996-5983. And we can hold 50 calls at one time. Usually we hold none by far, but we could do that. Well, we have a blonde joke for tonight, and this joke is going to be presented to us. And it's a short one, isn't it, Lucy? I think it is, yes. And Lucy's going to give us a blonde joke, and I think you'll enjoy this one. This involves someone that we all know. Go ahead, Lucy.
I'm not offended by all the dumb blonde jokes because I know I'm not dumb. And I also know that I'm not blonde. Dolly Parton.
Okay, Dolly Parton said that. How about that? All right. Actually, I didn't realize that. I thought Dolly Parton was a blonde. Was a natural blonde, I guess. You know, if this joke's out, maybe perhaps she was. But she's certainly a fine country singer and still in the business, I think. Okay, on a much more serious note, in order to reduce crime in society, we would like to get the guns off the street, so we're going to play the Higher Gun Coalition's public service announcement to the criminals on the streets of the world so that they will turn in their firearms. Go ahead, Higher Coalition.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Yes, Ohio Coalition, that is certainly a deadly idea to carry your guns. And most everybody realizes now in the state of Ohio, if you've been living around here a while, concealed carry permit holders can now carry their concealed firearm into places that serve liquor. And there's no limitation on them. Like in Texas, that you can't take it in a place that serves more than or makes more than 50% of its profits from alcohol. To be like a straight honky-tonk, I guess. But in Ohio, you can carry it into any place, but you're not allowed to drink. So that's a key point. And, you know, we're going to run into some cases here eventually where somebody's going to mess up on this and potentially ruin it for everyone else. But here's our green tip for tonight. I never thought of this one. Did you ever think of this, Audrey, or Emily, or Mike, or Lucy, of making your own soap? There's a lot of things I like to make, but I never thought I'd make my own soap. It says here in Esma Floyd's little book, 1001 Ways to Save the Planet, as a green tip, it says for an ecologically friendly alternative to chemical-ridden multi-surface cleaner, mix 1/2 cup of pure soap with 1 gallon of hot water and 1/4 cup of lemon juice. For a stronger cleaner, double the amount of soap and lemon juice, and use that instead of soap. I don't know, do you shower with that, or are you talking about cleaning the the bathroom and, you know, ledges and things like that. But anyway, that was tip number 640. And as I never thought about making my own soap. All these little tips take a lot of time, though, don't they? So they're burning up energy. Who can keep track of all that? It gets complicated. But let's take a look at some of the news stories. I think you'll enjoy some of these things. We'll start off with one here that is very interesting. And here's what it's about. We've got a San Jose police officer in California who just got their highest award. Their certificate of commendation was awarded to him because he saved the life of a woman who was riding a large riding lawnmower. And he was sitting in his police car about 6:30 p.m., it says, on May 17th this past year, when he saw a puff of smoke rising about a block away in the 100 block of Main Street. And he got out of his car and he ran over and he found this woman, Lisa Mortlock. She was pinned under her overturned lawnmower, if you can believe that, with the blade still spinning, the engine still running, and gasoline was spilling out all over the trapped woman. She was covered with gasoline. The emergency shutoff had been disconnected sometime earlier. So the guy's first thoughts as they came up to that, he says, I needed to turn it off or it would explode. And anyway, to make a long story short, he finally gets this, and he gets some other guy that's in the neighborhood that sees this going on, and he comes over and helps, and they get the lawnmower off of the woman. But it sounds like had this just been seconds or a minute later, this whole thing would have probably exploded, and the woman would have been killed. But that's another one of those cases where police officers act in the interest of all of us and save lives. And you know, I talk to people about this on a fairly regular basis. They think all police work is crime fighting. It's not. Even in the largest cities in the United States, 1/3 of your calls or less have anything to do with a crime. And most of it has to do with helping people, service and peacekeeping type of violations where, you know, kids are playing baseball in the street or something and you go and tell them to, you know, get off the street. You can't do that. But anyway, that's kind of interesting. But there's an interesting story here about police officers misusing tasers. They did a study in New York. It was the New York Civil Liberties Union. And they released the results Wednesday. They looked at 10 different departments. They looked at 851 incident reports from 8 police departments around the state. I'll get that right, 8 police departments. As well as 10 departments' policies and guidelines for using the weapons. And they found out that nearly 60% of the reported taser incidents did not meet expert-recommended criteria that limit the weapons used to situations where officers can document active aggression or a risk of physical injury. Active aggression or a risk of physical injury. 15% of the incidents reported were clearly inappropriate. I've never understood that. You know, YouTube's got a bunch of taser incidents on it where people film the cops using the taser, and most of these cases, police officers use it across the United States. They're warranted. But and some of those ones on YouTube are just terrible, where there's no reason. In fact, in some of these incidents, they said more than 25% of these taser incidents involve shocks directly to subject's chest area, despite explicit warnings by the weapons manufacturer that targeting the chest can cause cardiac arrest. And in 75% of the incidents, no verbal warnings were recorded. That's interesting. In other words, they didn't say, do this, or I'm going to hit you with the taser. And 40% involved at-risk people, children, the elderly, the visibly infirm, and individuals who are seriously intoxicated or mentally ill. 58% of the victims are Black or Latinos. The taser shoots out like 40,000 volts. And some of these things that they actually tase people, how many calls did they have, or how many incidents was it like that? Mike, do you remember? I'm trying to look for it real quick without going through this very long article about it. But in a bunch of these cases, the people were already handcuffed. They were not. That doesn't explain it all either, but you know, you could be a danger, be handcuffed and still resisting, but I've never found the fascination with using the taser in a lot of these incidents. You know, it's a useful device, but most places in the United States you never even hear about it. But apparently in New York, it's becoming an issue. Well, let's get to Vice President Joe Biden's comments. Last week, President Biden warned people that more people were likely to be raped and murdered if President Obama's job bill is not passed. I'm going to go over that again. Joe Biden warned that more people would likely be raped and murdered if President Obama's jobs bill is not passed. He was in Flint, Michigan, which has been a crime-ridden city for a very long time. They experimented with foot patrol back decades ago, foot patrol beats, which is a very interesting experiment run by Michigan State University. But he said, God only knows what the numbers will be this year for Flint if we don't rectify it. But he's saying, if you don't pass the president's job bill, then we're going to get more murders and more rapes. Let me see. I don't have a job, so I go out and rape people, I guess, or I can't get it. Trying to think about that one. I don't get it. Here's one that you'll just love. You know how the federal government likes to look into our lives more than once, right? Well, the United States Senate threw its support behind the potato Tuesday by voting to block an Obama administration proposal to limit the vegetables on school lunch lines. What happens, the Agriculture Department, you know how these agencies make rules and rules and more rules. They proposed rules earlier this week to reduce the amount of French fries in schools, limiting lunchrooms to 2 servings a week of potatoes and other starchy vegetables. I just, you know, with people streaming across the border illegally, Mexican drug gangs, I mean, on and on, all the things are going on in the United States, and our Senate and our regulatory agents are sitting around trying to figure out how many potatoes we should be eating a week. Isn't that disagreeable? I call this hillbillyism. You know, they're trying to take potatoes away from hillbillies. And how could you survive without having potatoes every day as a hillbilly, and let alone an Irish hillbilly? I mean, this is a direct hit on them, and I think the ISAMs, the Irish Southern Appalachian Migrants, should stand up and resist this whole idea. And they finally convinced them that potatoes can be a good source of fiber and potassium. And aren't potatoes low fat? Aren't they? I think they're like 3-4% fat. So apparently that's not the case. So Idaho got together, Maine got together, and they say that potatoes are a cheaper, nutritious way to feed children when school budgets are strapped. They're a cheap and efficient way anytime, whether school budgets are strapped or not. But I thought that was something. I like this. San Francisco, what a caring city it is. They do so many things for you as a private citizen there. They are now going to give business owners a tax break if they'll hire people with felony convictions. How do you like that? San Francisco businesses that hire people with felony convictions would get a tax break under legislation that expected to be introduced today. Ex-felons are among the most challenged populations in getting work, says San Francisco Supervisor Ross Mercurini, who's crafting the plan. So there you go. If you can't find a job, maybe you can go out and do a burglary, you know, so you don't get sent to prison, just get on probation, and then you'll get a special thing. The goal was to shave about $10,000 off a business company's payroll tax burden for every new felon they hire. What a deal. I mean, that is a deal. That would make you want to hire felons. What's that company that advertises on the radio right here, Mike, that says we're going to send out repair people and they're not tattooed ex-felons? I think that's some Toledo company that does that advertising. But anyway, that's interesting. This is kind of a strange event. Police departments are now starting to resist submitting officers' DNA. When you have a multiple homicide scene, for example, if an officer's in there and they pick up all the DNA in order to try to, you know, identify the people and eliminate other people from being suspects and all that. Well, cops don't like this now, because if you go inside the crime scene and you sneeze, I guess that leaves some DNA evidence, and the cops don't want to do this anymore, because you know what they're worried about? they're worried about the safeguarding of the DNA in the databases. They're saying they're concerned because this contains genetic data that could tell whether they're going to be sick or develop some type of special illness later on in life. And I never heard any cops complaining about this when they were talking about taking DNA from ordinary citizens. But now they're starting to do that. And in fact, the police in other parts of the world, including the United Kingdom and Australia, have been keeping officers' DNA on file for several years. You know, what don't they do in UK in terms of the invasion of your personal liberties? But that's kind of interesting that you see the police officers now worrying about giving samples of their DNA so they can be eliminated as suspects and, you know, other issues related to a crime scene. So kind of an interesting idea. Let's look at one more news story, and then we'll go to some of the show business. This is a story about New York City. Is one of the CIA's most experienced clandestine operatives is working inside the New York City Police Department. Said he arrived in July as the special assistant to the Deputy Commissioner of Intelligence. While his title is clear, his job responsibilities are not clear. Federal and city officials have offered different explanations as to why this top CIA officer was assigned to a municipal police department since the Associated Press revealed the assignment in August. The CIA is prohibited, did you know this, from spying domestically, and its unusual partnership with the NYPD has troubled top lawmakers. And so now, since this time, the guy has resigned and went somewhere else. But apparently he'd been there before, and they told him he had to choose between the two jobs. He couldn't work both, and he resigned his, I guess, his CIA position once. Is that right? Yeah. And then he came back, but he's been a station chief, I guess, and all sorts of other things. But, you know, why would the CIA be on temporary or any other kind of duty to a local police department? And of course, what some people are worrying about is the snooping around on, mosques and that type of thing, because we already know they've had on the counterterrorism squads. Excuse me. Have been working in mosques and that type of thing, and people don't like that if there's not reasonable suspicion for them to be doing this. So. Kind of an interesting thing. I hope we don't have the CIA around now. One more story. I have to do this one. Detroit's ex-cons. Detroit is having a job fair for ex-cons. Says the city of Detroit has high unemployment, and no one has a tougher time finding work than ex-felons. And it's true. They have a tough time. So more than 200 jobs were available, and no one would have been not convicted of felony was eligible to attend. So you had to have a felony record to go do that. So looks like being a felon, at least in a remote few number of places in the United States, is kind of a good deal. You get a heads up on some type of job. And there are restaurants, there are other type of different types of jobs, but it's work. So that's good. Okay, that's it. What we're going to do now is shift over to the show. And the show, the radio show we're going to play is called Black and Blue. This is from the early 1930s. And this involves two guys named, one named Black and one named Blue. And they're supposed to be the dumbest and the luckiest detectives. Some of the things they talk about will be really, really funny. And this was a popular show, I guess, for a number of years. I'd never heard of it, so I discovered it this past week. Here we go with Black and Blue from the 1930s.
The Adventures of Detectives Black and Blue. Thank you. Speaking. In a moment, you ought to hear the first episode in a series of original entertainments featuring the world's dumbest and luckiest detectives, Black and Blue. We promise you thrills, suspense, humor, and action in their adventures, and we invite you to follow the program regularly over the station to which you are now listening. As the curtain rises on the first act, the scene is the shipping department of a large wholesale grocery house in Duluth, Minnesota. The Adventures of Detectives Black and Blue.
Hey, Black.
What do you want, Blue?
It's time to eat your lunch. Come on. I'm hungry.
26 and 9's 35 and 3 more's 38. And 27 more off on that anchor line.
Oh, come on and eat.
Doggone. Now I'm all mixed up again. Say, if they never make another pound of sugar, that'll be soon enough for me. Where's my lunchbox?
Here it is. Sit down. What's the matter? Your sugar tally off again?
Yeah, I'm short 19 sacks and a case of domino. Can't understand it. Them last two cars checked in perfect.
Seems to me this sugar shortage is getting worse than it ever was before. Say, Black, how long you been with the house?
Well, you know. I come with Brownstone and Parker same time you did, 3 years ago.
That's right. You started on the 17th of January and I come just 2 days after.
Funny how we got acquainted, wasn't it? Over at Mrs. Webster's boarding house on Lake Avenue. Remember me losing one of my cufflinks?
Yeah, and me finding it in my hash.
Take one of these apples, Blue. I only want one.
Thanks, old pard. Now, look here. What I want to know is, why did we get along okay until about 6 months ago, and then we ain't had nothing but trouble ever since with shortages?
Well, I'll tell you. It all dates back to the time they made this Roy Bowman the warehouse foreman.
I'd bet this house is losing $100,000 a year on these shortages. Yet nobody can't seem to do nothing about it.
Now, look here, Blue. I've been doing some deducting.
Deducting? What's that?
Oh, that's the way big guys like Sherlock Holmes and all them top-notch detectives work. Deducting is taking away something from something else that you haven't got, and the remainder is what you have.
It sounds cuckoo to me.
Now, listen, I'll explain. There's four sides to this grocery warehouse, ain't there?
Yeah. Well, anybody can deduct that.
All right. Now, look. On the front of the building is the offices. Nobody can't take merchandise out that way.
That's right.
Now, on the north side of the building is the railroad tracks, and nobody ain't going to drive any truck down the Northern Pacific tracks, are they?
I'm right with you, old kid. How about the south side?
Well, being the shipping clerk, you ought to be able to deduct that one for yourself without me helping you. There's only the outgoing delivery trucks can get in that driveway, and at night the gates are closed and locked. Also, the warehouse doors.
Well, then that just leaves one way for the stuff to be stolen.
That's just what I'm deducting. What's to stop somebody in a small boat sneaking up in the slip along this side by the dock here, loading her up and lambing out into the bay?
Now, that's where you're all wet, because the warehouse doors is locked on the dock side also.
No, sir. Let me tell you something. I've been checking up on the dates of some of the shortages. Every one happens on a night that we got a steamer in.
And then what?
Just this. Roy Bowman gave orders a long time ago that whenever a ship might come in the night, we was to leave the dockside doors unlocked.
What do you know about that? Gee, that's a pipe, Black. All we got to do now is come down here some night and watch.
Listen, let's come down here tonight and lay around. The Tionesta's due in here sometime tonight. I got the bills a-laden right here on the desk.
I'm going to be right with you.
Jitters. Don't let them hunkies hear us. Tonight at midnight, we'll sneak down on number one dock end. Keep your head down, Blue. They're hauling in the gangplank.
Gee. Ain't a ship pretty at night? Look at all them rows of lights.
Sure, that's the staterooms.
Boy, wouldn't you like to be in one of them? Pound in your ear?
I'll say I would. I never did get enough traveling. Them people on that tie nest of there, they wake up in the morning out of sight of land, headed for Buffalo.
And we'll be headed for the little old job, carrying our lunch pails. Buffalo, eh?
Say, ain't that
Niagara Falls?
Sure, you might say it's practically the same place. I know a fella that went there once on his wedding trip.
Well, I don't see no chance of me and you ever taking any wedding trips or riding on a steamboat or nothing else. As long as we're pushing a truck around a grocery warehouse.
Oh, well, a fella hadn't ought to be pessimistic, Blue. All you gotta do is save your money, and pretty soon, with the interest and the sinking funds and everything, you'll have a wad of dough.
I can't save any money.
No wonder. You're always falling for one of them slick book agents.
Oh, I ain't bought so many books. Anyway, I ain't bought so many lately.
Oh, no, of course not. What'd you do last month? You sign your life away for a set of U.S. Grant's memoirs. I've been at Brownstone and Parker's for 3 years, and I ain't never seen nobody promoted for memorizing Grant's memoirs.
Well, listen, I've got a feeling that if we don't find out who's swiping this sugar, we're going to get promoted downwards.
Yeah, and outwards. Well, we may find out tonight. Say, there's the officer going up on the bridge. He's got a swell job.
Yeah, gold braid and everything. They get the dough, too, them boys.
Look, there she goes.
All right, let go of her. Let go. Starboard the wheel, hard over.
On the starboard, sir.
All in your breast lines. Hold on with the bow. All right, Mr. Wilkins, come astern slowly. That's good. Stop her. Amidships the wheel.
Amidships, sir.
Say, Blue, that fella on the bridge knows his stuff. See how he holds her in at the bow until he works the ship out into the channel.
Let go of the bow. All in your line. Everything clear astern, Mr. Wilkins?
All clear, sir.
Quarter speed astern. Watcher at the wheel. Quarter lift,
sir.
Ain't it dark here now after all them lights on the ship?
Hush. Don't talk so loud. You can't tell who's hiding around here.
Say, don't that water look black and ugly? Gee, I wished I was in my nice, comfortable bed. That's what I wish.
Well, I've been kind of thinking myself. We ain't sure that anybody is going to steal anything tonight.
Yeah, and that's just it. Supposing they don't. We're a couple of saps sitting out here back of this pile of boxes at 1:30 in the morning.
Blue, I feel kind of nervous about this thing.
Yeah, I'm getting so cold I could sit on a hot stove.
So am I. Maybe after all, we are a couple of saps losing our sleep.
Yeah, and maybe losing our jobs, too.
What do you mean?
Well, look, supposing we got caught here and got reported to the GM. He'd think we're the guys that's doing the stealing.
I never thought of that. Say, that Roy Bowman, he'd help the idea along.
I ain't hankering for no bullet in my head, either.
Say, if it only hit you in the head, it wouldn't do you no harm. What do you say?
I say, let's lamb out of here.
Well, you go first.
Go ahead. I'll be right alongside of you.
All right. Duck down low now. Stick right close to me. I might fall down or something.
Hey, Black. Wait a minute. Listen.
What's the matter?
Listen, I tell you. There's some boat coming up the cliff.
Right. I can hear the motor.
Look. There's something moving right out there in the channel. Just like a black shadow.
They got no lights or nothing. It's them crooks.
Flatten yourself down.
Look. You can peek out between these boxes. They're coming up to our dock.
Hey, Black. They'll shoot the ears off of us if they catch us here spying on them.
They're climbing out on the dock.
Yeah. And now they're opening the warehouse doors. One of them's got a searchlight.
They're taking sacks of sugar out and dropping them down into their boat.
And that's where some of Brownstone and Parker's dough is going, too.
Can't understand what our night watchman is doing. Where is he? Why don't he stop them?
Hey, Black, do you think we ought to rush out and stop them?
Yeah, I think we ought to, but we ain't going to do it. Why, them fellas will have gats. What chance we got?
That's just what I was thinking. I was getting ready to hold you if you was going to start out.
Say, I don't need no holding. You hold yourself.
Boy, I'm anchored right to this spot.
Wait a minute. I want to get a look at that feller's face when that searchlight goes on again. There.
Do you know him?
Pipe down, I tell you. Wait a minute now. They're getting ready to pull up.
It, old kid. Hush. Who's that coming around the corner of the building? Getting out against this pile head.
Hush. Look out, you don't knock this over. Somebody's left a tin can sitting here.
Look, he's lighting a pipe. Gee whiz, it's the night watchman, Black.
Listen, Blue, you know who that fella was that I saw when they was loading the sugar? The fella they turned the searchlight on?
No. What fella?
The fella helping them thieves.
No, who was it?
It was our night watchman.
Good night.
The love of Mike. Now you've knocked that tin can off in the pile head.
Come on, Blue. Shoot at us. I'm leaving.
Come on yourself.
You ain't leaving me.
To listen to the next episode of the thrilling and amusing adventures of Detectives Black and Blue over this station.
Segment. It's called Put Off the Train.
The Adventures of Detectives Black and Blue. And Blue, in company with Chief Blackfeather of the Canadian Police, plan to leave for Canada to aid the Canadian Police in the capture of a mysterious scar-faced Indian known as the Ghost. But the two detectives take the wrong train. The present scene is at Clear Lake, a lonely flag station over the border in Canada. Black and Blue have just been put off the Winnipeg Flyer. The time is 3:00 in the morning. The Adventures of Detectives Black and Blue.
There she goes. Just two red lights disappearing down the track.
Yeah. And here we are, just two... Well, what are we anyway?
Yeah, and where are we? A fine railroad this is. Put us off way out here in the country. In the middle of the night, too.
Yeah, and boy, you can tell you're in Canada, all right. Listen to that wind howling.
We should ought to bring suit against the Canadian Pacific.
Well, they can't help it if the wind is blowing.
No, but they put us off the train.
Well, I don't know, Black. They ain't to blame for us getting on the wrong train, I guess.
And not a light in sight. I don't suppose there's even any houses around here.
Well, there's a light down there on the platform. Right under that big green signal up in the air there. Gee, maybe there's a operator or somebody around. Let's go and see.
Well, you'll have to help me carry some of this stuff.
All right, go ahead. I'll take the snowshoes.
Gee, what a lonesome place. I bet you could hear frogs singing out there if it was summertime. But I don't suppose it ever gets summertime here.
Yeah, there's some fella in there. I can see him through the bay window. Push open the door.
Gee, it's warm in here. That's one thing. Shut the door, Blue, shut it.
Well, I'll tell you, Black. I think the first thing is to ask the operator or station agent how we can get out of here.
Go ahead. Talk to him through that little window.
Excuse me, mister.
Hello. You're the two that got off number one, ain't you?
Yes, we are. And we're kind of up against it, too. You see, we got on the wrong train at Duluth. It was the wrong train, you see.
What's your destination?
Why, we was going to Eagle River, Canada. That's the first place we was going.
Now, let me see your ticket, will you?
Sure, here they are. Both of them.
Yeah. Well, you're a long way off from where you two want to go. You see, the train you was on goes to Winnipeg. The train you should have got on goes to North Dakota via Portel, that way.
Yeah, and the worst of it is a friend of ours is on the other train, too.
Well, that's too bad.
Well, the conductor told us we could catch a train here tomorrow morning sometime that'd take us back to Thief River Falls. And then we could catch some other train that goes to Eagle River.
Yeah, number four comes through here in the morning at 8:17. That's about, let's see, it's 3:15 now. Well, you'll have 5 hours here. You can sleep on the benches there if you want to.
Ain't they no hotel here?
Hotel? There ain't nothing or nobody but me.
Gee, we'll be a whole day late now getting into Eagle River.
Say, wait a minute. I got an idea. I might save you some time. Number seven, the Vancouver Mail. She was due out of here at 2:53, but they got laid out a little on account of the hot box at Rima. Now, you just wait. If I can catch them on the wire before they pull out of Cloverdale Junction, they might stop here and pick you up. Say, I'll see if I can make it.
Gee, Blue. If he can get this train to stop and pick us up, that'll help some anyway.
Tough break that we got on the wrong train, not sure. No telling where Chief Blackfeather is now.
We know where he is, all right. But what good does that do us? He's on the Canadian Pacific Limited going away from us 60 miles an hour.
Say, I tell you what we could do, Black. Maybe we can send a message to him on the other train.
Yeah, we might do that. When the agent fella gets through telegraphing, let's ask him.
Huh?
Here's Cloverdale now, boys. Wait just a minute. I'll see what he says. Well, boys, you're in luck. Number 7 will stop here just long enough for you to get on board. Better get out on the platform so you won't delay them. They're late now.
Gee, mister, that's sure fine. Will we buy our tickets from you?
No, you'll have to buy them from the conductor on the train. I don't have any tickets here at night. The day man keeps them locked up. Number 7 is the Vancouver Mail, and she generally goes through here like a shot out of a gun.
Well, say, where do we go on this train?
Why, she'll take you right into Eagle River. But they go a different way than the way you was going. They're due in there tomorrow night sometime.
Well, we just can't thank you enough, mister.
Oh, that's all right. Of course, I'd have been glad to have you stay here the rest of the night with me, because it gets kind of lonesome, unless I have train orders for freight trains that take the siding here or something like that.
This Vancouver Mail, she's a fast one, huh?
I'll say she is. She carries mail to the Orient, you know, China and Japan and all them places. They hit them up because they got to make connections with the steamers at Vancouver.
Gosh, I didn't know people was writing letters to China by the train load.
Oh, yes. She carries registered mail and a lot of valuable express.
Do you think we should ought to get out on the platform now?
Well, you might just as well get your baggage out there already. The first pullman hole will be about 100 feet from the station here, and you can carry your stuff down there, and then you'll be all set when she pulls in. They don't like to stop long.
Well, we'll do that. Here, you hold the door open, Black, and I'll take part of this stuff.
Get back in there.
Oh, gee.
Oh, Robert.
Stick them up. Come on in, boys. Keep these two fellas covered. Hey, you in the office there. Stick up your hand.
Hey, this looks like a holdup, huh?
Yeah, it is a holdup. Not a moving picture, either. And don't make no mistake, because I might make a mistake with this gun, and you'll be drinking your coffee in the morning, sitting on a cloud.
Well, I ain't craving no bullets. Don't worry about me moving. I only carry about $50 here.
We're not out for chicken feed. What time was the Vancouver Mail due through here? 2:53, ain't she?
Yes, she is, but she's late tonight.
Well, where is she now?
She pulled out of Cloverdale just a few minutes ago. I was just talking to the operator.
Yeah, where's Cloverdale?
It's the next station east of here.
Well, keep away from that telegraph key. Now, listen. You got that board set for clear, haven't you?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I know it. It shows green outside. Well, you throw it a red, you understand?
Well, I can do it, but it ain't necessary.
What do you mean? Don't pull no funny stuff with me now.
I told you, you don't need to worry about me, mister. I've been held up before.
Yeah, and this ain't the first mail train we've held up. And you wouldn't be the first station agent I've drilled either, get that?
Yes, sir. But number 7's going to stop here anyway to pick up these two passengers. She don't usually stop.
There you. You're sat standing there. It's you I'm talking to.
Yes, sir.
Is that so, what he said? Are you waiting to get on that train?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, mister. The operator, he just told him to stop.
Gee, mister, can't you let us hide out back at the station somewhere? We don't want to be in no holdup because they might be shooting them, etc. You suppose you could let us go just as a favor?
Shut up!
Yes, sir.
Hey, you two. Charlie and Jim. You two guys go on past the depot a little ways, about where the engine will stop. Cover the engineer and fireman. You two other fellas line up ready for the mail car. Me and Slim will take care of the conductors and the other trainmen. When she stops, let go with your rods alongside of the train and scare daylights out of all of them. Shoot them up. Nothing like noise to scare passengers.
Say, mister.
What do you want?
Could I take my hand down for a minute to scratch my nose?
Shut up, or I'll scratch with a bullet out of his .45.
Yes, sir. My nose is tickling pretty bad, sir. Blue, this is terrible.
Shut up, Black.
Hey, Slim. Here's an idea. Take these two sappy-looking guys outside with you. Make them stand alongside of the mail car. And if there's any shooting starts, you can use them for screams. Just jump behind them.
Oh, say, Mr. Bennett, that ain't fair. We ain't robbers. We might get shot.
You might, huh? Well, what's more, you probably will. How do you like that?
On your toes, boys. Here she comes. Outside, everybody.
Hey, you, station agent. Come on out of there. If there's any shooting from the mail cars, we'll let them plug you, too. Come on, boys. This is going to be sweet pickers.
Oh, Mr. Robert, do we have to go? I don't want to go out there.
You don't, huh?
Ouch, don't kick me no more. I'll go. I'll go.
On your toes now. Make it snappy, guys. Here she is.
Oh.
see that lead-in songs and the sign-off songs in those days were pretty long. That one goes on about, about 3 minutes, but that was fairly typical in the late 1920s and 1930s for radio shows. So apparently those melodies got embedded in your head. Well, speaking of that, we're going to ask one more time Vera Lynn to do the sign-off for our show as she sings We'll Meet Again. See you next week.
Again, don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do. Till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know. Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing. We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know where.